doing, everyone? Once again, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. As always, the number is 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. I am Russ Salzberg, sitting alongside Y.A. Tittle. No, I'm just kidding. But with the head, it looks a
close
little bit
to it.
Like
I should have blood coming down my, yes, my nose or my, yes, or my eyes, or my head.
My good friend and 22 years in the National Football League. I mean, that's a long time at anyone's job, but in the National Football League, it's really special. Jeff Eagles, how are we doing today?
What's up, Russ?
Well, what's up is
this is good. I mean, yeah, this is our
reunion.
Inaugural show here.
Yeah. At 0-3, the question is, what's up? And here's what I would ask you, being a guy who, as I said, played 22 years in the league. You know, everybody, you get what I get. Everybody wants to know, can this team make the playoffs? Only three previous teams with an 0-3 record have made it into the postseason. I think the attitude has to be, you can't win 13 before
today.
You win one.
Well, yeah, and Coach McAdoo said that.
I would think it has to be. You know, I liken it to the World Series. If you're down 0-3, it has to start with, you can't come back and win four before you win the first one. You can't win the second one before. It has to be one at a time. And I think that's the attitude they have to take.
Well, and we're going to hear it over and over again, the circle the wagon theme. There's no, that wagon's, it's got a big, that's a big wagon. You better get around that sucker because it's one at a time, and it's the old cliche, you take them one at a time, Russ. And this team really is what they're doing. They're killing themselves. Bad football. And one thing that has to change is the culture of what's going on in the locker room. And when you're on a team like this, I've been on them. I was on the 0-6 team as a Giants at one point in time, and I will tell you this. There was a lot less talent on that 0-6 team that I was on than there's 0-3 team that is now.
Right.
There's still a lot of talent. There's still a lot of good players on this roster. They have to figure a way to go down to no better place to go on the road, okay, and get a win. Because there is a little more pressure when you play at home and you're 0-3. Okay, because the fans are starting to – the 2 weeks ago at the Detroit game, okay, the first series they went 3-and-out, the Boo Birds were out. The first series of the game. Just think if they were having a home game this week at 0-3, things get a little bit tough. So you can take your unit, if you will, the team, go on the road, collectively go together, go down there with one mission and knocking off a Bucks team who just got annihilated by the Minnesota Vikings last week. So this is not going to be an easy game. It's going to be hot. They got a little warm up in Philly. It was hot last week there. But bottom line is they got to get some guys healthy, get some guys back. And this is a tough, tough game mentally for a lot of these young guys. You think about some of these guys like Landon Collins and some of the guys that came from big programs.
Right.
They are not used to losing.
Well, that's the question that I wanted to ask you. You were talking about in that locker room. Now, I'm in that locker room. Don near every day.
Mm-hmm.
You and I were together at, you know, during camp.
Mm-hmm.
This team was all business. In that locker room, they don't walk around with, like, you know, the you-know-what doesn't stink. They walk around. It's business. They
Good.
Take care of business. They study. But something is transcending, and they practice well. Something is transcending, or should I say not transcending, on Sundays when they get on the field. And now I wonder, like, you use a guy like Landon Collins who is, I mean, he's on his way. You know, Bill Parcells used to say, let's not put his bust in Canton just yet, but if this kid stays healthy,
sure,
he's on his way. But guys who aren't used to that losing, like to have an 0-3, you wonder if they know how to handle it.
Well, it's tough. I think that, you know, that's what the coaches are for. The coaches, they have to – the head coach has to develop a mindset with these players coming in to the week when they're 0-3, 0-4, 1-5, whatever it is, it's a team that's down, and have to try to build their confidence up. And how do you build your confidence up? You go out and you practice well. I think that if I'm the head coach and we're on a team like this, I'm trying to bring out the positives rather than the negatives. We know that everybody that's bringing out the negatives, it's the media, social media. Put your phones away. Put the papers down. Go home. Eat dinner. Go to bed. Don't watch anything. But my point is that you've got to build within. build on positives. There were some positives in that game against the Eagles last week. I mean, they finally got out of that, got out and scored some points in that fourth quarter. So there were some good things. Build on those, and going forward, take some of those positives and go down. And that's all you can do, Russ. You can't sit there. You have a short-term memory as far as last week, and all you're going to hear about is the statistic. Well, you know, 0-3, how many teams make the playoffs? Pretty much none. 0-4, you're pretty much the season's over. By the way, you have 12 games left. That's tough, but you have to keep it within.
Hey, I know some of you Giant fans, a great many of you are Yankees fans. And I remember being in Boston at Fenway Park, game four, in the ninth inning. We were all gathered in the tunnel to get ready for the celebration of the Yankees clinching. With Mariano on the mound, game four in the ninth inning, you're down, you're up 3-0. And you know what? There never was that Yankee celebration.
I will
say
this.
But it's got to be one at a time.
I got to be a little bit, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are probably looking at this Eagles team, you know, or Giants team, that they're 0-3. You know, they're having all these offensive problems. Their defense is not playing like they did last year. They're giving up way too much in the run game. But, you know, teams that are 0-3 that are a good team. The Giants are a good team. That's scary. That's scary for that Buck team. They know they can't overlook this 0-3 team.
Well, I don't
think
they are.
So I think that, you know, this should be a good matchup. I think both these defenses last year were very good. I think both of them have taken a step back. I think the Giants players, from a defensive and talent perspective, can play better defensively than the Buccaneers can. Offensively, you know, the Giants offense has just got to get in some rhythm. The Giants offense is broke. It fixed a little bit in the fourth quarter. I mean, you look at Eli, he's throwing 71% completion on the season. Keep doing what you're doing. Go out of that shotgun to throw the quick passes, and then maybe get some resemblance of a running game. Rush, you know you've been watching football long enough to know is if you're not going to have a run game, you're not going to be able to have a successful passing game.
Well, I think what they need also this week is a fast start so they can all have a little bit of sigh of
relief.
Look
at you with this pen with the light on it. I like it. Are you writing stuff in the dark? Is that why you have that?
No, actually what I'm doing here is giving us the – I'm going to give the callers right now, our viewers, the injury report.
All right.
Casillas, ankle and wrist. Darquois with the back. Again, folks, we don't know the extent of how much they're practicing. This is just a list. Casillas again, ankle, wrist. Darquois back. Goodson, shin. Bobby Hart, ankle. Jack Rabbit, Janoris Jenkins, an ankle. JT Thomas, groin. And Olivier Vernon, the ankle. We certainly want Olivier back. But let's open up the phone lines. 201-939-4513. Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Let's start with Mike nearby in Jersey. Mike, how you doing? You're on with Russ and Jeff.
What's up, Mike?
Hey, guys. How's it doing?
Good. Mike. How you doing?
Okay, I just had two questions. One would be directed towards either of you guys, whoever can answer it. Is there a weak point in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense that the Giants may be able to exploit this game?
I have not done enough study to answer that question, just going on what I've seen so far. I know that McCoy is a little bit banged up. They're a big defensive tackle, so I think that there's probably something you can maybe go at. Well, will the Giants run the football? We'll have to see. What's the other one?
I was wondering who you think was going to be covering Beckham and Marshall the whole game, considering they have two pretty much top-notch corners in Hargraves and Grimes.
Well, that's your answer.
It's who do you think will be on who?
It's going to be Hargraves. It'll definitely be Hargraves. And it'll be interesting to see if Hargraves follows Beckham around. You know, some teams don't do that. They'll keep their guys on the quarters on each side of the field. And if one of them, you know, Beckham goes to one side, then the other guy's going to have to cover him. But if I had to tell, Hargraves will be the guy that's going to be covering Odell if they want him to.
Thanks very much for the call, Mike. Let's now head up to the Boogie Down in the Bronx and speak with Ralph. Ralph, how are we doing today, my friend?
Hey, guys. How you doing? Pleasure to talk to you guys.
What's up, Ralph?
Yeah, so I called after the Detroit game, and I was telling John and Lance about the no huddle, that it would be effective. And you know what? Sunday, it was very effective. I thought it was very effective. But now, again, people think no huddle, that you got to keep the same person on the field. You really don't. You can substitute two. So, I mean, on that fourth down play, I mean, McAdoo got to understand that we need a push. So you need to have Red Ellison in the game. You need to have Smith, the fullback, in the game and try to get that running, you know, get that half a yard. And even on there was a play early in the first half, it's 13 inches, and we're throwing tosses.
Yeah, like, I don't
understand some of the play calling.
Well, even Coach McAdoo had said yesterday that he wished he had a better call there. One thing that everybody needs to understand about no huddle, there's a difference in no huddle and hurry up offense. Against the Eagles,
right,
the Giants ran a no huddle hurry up for a couple reasons. Matchups. The Eagles like the Eagles like to rotate a lot of their defensive tackles and defensive personnel. As you saw, the one play with John Jerry was trying to hold the guy from going off the field. They were making substitutions. But you know, why did the Giants go to a no huddle hurry up? Because they had to. And that's the reason they were just in a quick. That's how Eli loves to run that type of offense. They were successful at it in the fourth quarter. Yeah. But what was missing? What was missing? The running game.
Yeah.
The running game.
True.
You know what, Ralph? Part of the problem, though, when you say why are they doing it on third and inches, and I couldn't agree with you more. And you know, the coach is not going to say, "Geez, I don't have confidence in my run game."
I understand that, Russ, but like again, we went and got Red Ellison.
Oh, I couldn't.
We went
agree.
And added
listen,
a fullback.
Listen.
And I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I understand we're getting caught up in the game and Eli was on fire. There's no question about it. And I feel the same way that Jeff said, that when he's in that rhythm, he's effective. But again, when you do, like I said, the no huddle, the hurry up, if you can substitute that Red Ellison, that Smith, even from there, we can go play action. The defense is still going to react because the fullbacks in the game and the blocking tight ends in the game, that we can maybe catch him sleeping, catch him creeping up. And look, we did a play where we went play action, and Eli hit Sterling Shepard right over the top of the linebacker just because the linebacker saw the play action from Darkwood, and they know Darkwood's a running back that's going to get the ball in when he's in the game. And just that little element of surprise, that little element of just showing it, I think makes a huge difference for the offense.
Well, Ralph, and buddy, thank you for the call. Listen, the Ellison situation, and I think you would agree with this. I mean, everybody, I mentioned this yesterday, everybody within this building, people covering the team, were talking about Rhett Ellison was going to be so vital from the point of attack with the Giants this season. And I think circumstances, for whatever reason, you know, getting behind the eight ball. Listen, the Giants, it took them, what, how many quarters? It took them 12 quarters to get a lead.
Close to it.
You know, so the situation, sometimes it dictates that. But listen, without question, Ellison and Smith, everybody wants to see them more involved with what's going on.
Well, what happens is when you start going into the no-huddle hurry-up and you have the personnel in there that you have, there is no substitution. So the minute you start bringing Red Ellison in or Shane Smith to come in and, as a fullback, you're kind of tipping your hat a little bit, but I understand what Ralph was saying about, you know, you can bring them in and maybe do something different, maybe a little play action or, you know, but I just, listen, Shane Smith didn't take one rep at fullback last weekend, and you surely would have liked to see him down there when the ball was on the, you know, one-inch line. Or even just go something jumbo there. But we're not the ones that are calling plays. That, you know, and the other thing, too, that I want to let everybody know as far as from viewership goes, there's a play called, okay, that's sent in to Eli through the headset. We're not on the field. We're not seeing the personnel that's in the game as much as Eli is. And there's a good chance that a lot of these plays are getting changed at the line of scrimmage. So unless somebody asked the coach specifically, did you call this play and did Eli change it, we don't know. So I just threw a caution to the wind on certain situations like that. It sounds to me like the one situation where they had the toss on the fourth down play, that was the one that Coach McAdoo said, I wish I had that call back. You know that was his call.
All right. Again,
speaking of calls,
the number is to call is 201-939-4513. Russ Salzberg here with Jeff Fiegels. Let's go down to North Carolina and speak with Patrick. I should say good afternoon, Patrick. How are you doing today?
How are you guys? It's a pleasure to be able to talk with you, Jeff, a long-time fan of yours.
Are you a Tar Heel fan?
No, I'm not a Tar Heel fan. Not at all. I'm a Notre Dame fan.
Let's hang on.
There's a couple of things I wanted to hit on. With the offensive formation, we heard that we were going to see a lot more packages this year, and I don't think that we've really seen that too often. We've seen a number of trick plays this year with some end arounds and stuff like that, but we really haven't seen too many formation changes. The double tight end set, the previous caller said Shane Smith lining up in the fullback position, and we heard that that was going to be one of the many changes that was supposed to take place this year, and we haven't really seen that for the first 3 weeks.
Well, I'm just wondering. Okay, so I don't know if Ben McAdoo came out and said, now that we have a fullback that we're going to have all these different formations using him. I think that he's on the roster for certain situations, but he's not going to be a guy like that was running with O.J. Anderson, and a fullback back in the days. So they're going to use him in different situations. If you look at Ingram, they've used him in the backfield. They've got his hand in the dirt. They've got him in the slot. So they are moving him around in a little bit more situations than they did last year at the tight end position with Will Tye. I think there's still a lot left in that playbook that the Giants have not exposed yet. And I think if there's ever a better time to get it out, it's probably this week against the Bucs.
Well, listen, it can't be too soon. Let's put it that way. New Jersey, here nearby. Kenny, how we doing today? You're on with Russ and Jeff.
Hey, fellas, how we doing today?
Good.
Jeff, always an honor. Russ,
thank you, Ken.
I've been watching you since I was a kid.
Oh, so you want to make me feel old. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
I'm 32.
I love it.
I'm not that young. I'm 32. I was born in 85. The Giants didn't start winning Super Bowls until I graced this earth with my presence.
There you
Very
go.
Nice. It was all your. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's all because of me, let me tell you. I want to rewind a little bit because I've been trying to get a hold of you guys for a little over a week now. Right before the half in the Lions game, there's a minute 15, a minute 20 left on the clock when the Lions are getting ready to kick a field goal. And Ben McAdoo's holding on to his timeouts like he can take him home with him or take him on to the second half with him. And what if he misses the field goal? Now you got great field position, and now you have no time on the clock because you refused to call a timeout. I mean,
How much time ran off from a minute and 15? You said they were getting ready to line up for a field goal.
It's like 40 seconds.
All right. So, I think I don't remember the situation, but I'm just trying to understand – how that first half went for the Giants and the way that they were executing on offense. I get your rationale. I really do. But again, we're not the coaches. We don't understand what their thinking is. They just want to get in and get some adjustments made at halftime and come back out. Listen, there are a lot of teams around this league that, and I'll tell you two teams that I know that are calling timeouts there for sure. That's one of them is Kansas City with Andy Reid, and the other one is McCarthy with the Packers. Those teams always are using their timeouts and wanting to go down and try to score at the end of the game, but they also have really good offenses. So that could be a point too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it went to a two-score game at that point with that field goal. It was a one-score game before that. You have, if you're winning, hey, you want to get into the locker room, that's fine.
No, I get it, yeah.
But, you got to make an attempt to put points on the board, to put your team in a better position coming out of the half, because you're getting the ball at the end of the half. If he misses the field goal and you go down and kick a field goal, you get the ball, you score a touchdown, now you're winning. And that's the only rationale I have with that. Also, with the running game, we haven't been able to run since David Wilson got hurt. And I really don't try to get on the offensive line. I don't try to get on the play calling. But you have to line up and say, I'm going to beat the guy across from me on a play and do it.
Oh, there's no question.
I have a job driving a truck, and not being able to pass protect and not being able to run block is your entire job. That's like me loading the truck and then driving it off a bridge.
Well, don't do that.
That's all I got, guys. Have a good one.
All right, Kenny. Thank you very
much. Don't load the truck and drive off the bridge, please.
Kenny's point about, the end of a half – I think I always view it like a fan. I don't view it as a coach. Coaches view it differently. But my attitude is, I don't care if there's 1 second left on the clock, if you got the ball. You know what? Try a long Hail Mary. Doesn't matter if you're up or you're down, because if maybe you're going to get a penalty and you get one. But I know coaches don't think like that.
I'll tell you how coaches think. They think of how the first half was going, how the rhythm of the game was going. And you also have to understand the prolific passer that you have on the other team, okay, offensively. And if you save your timeouts and now you got to get the ball back to a Detroit team that has three timeouts left and Matthew Stafford at the helm. So, I mean, there's you got to kind of think, I don't want to get the ball back to these guys with taking too much off the clock and then giving them the ball back and maybe, going in and scoring a touchdown or something. So there's a lot of thinking that goes into it. I mean, you can argue every point in football, point.
Now, conversely, the Eagles game this past weekend, Doug Peterson did something which I would never understand.
Fourth and eight?
It's late first half. You're up. It's fourth and eight. Not fourth and three, fourth and eight. You're going to give the Giants the ball, and you also know that the Giants
are getting the ball
to start the second half. That, to me, could have blown up right in his face right then and there.
Well, two things that stood out to me in that situation. Number one, and first and foremost, is that just goes to show you that the Eagles had no respect for the Giants offense. Okay, the second thing is that's Doug Peterson. He led the NFL 48 fourth down attempts last season. That's just his MO.
Right.
But I think the fact is here is it's not so much that he goes for it on fourth down all the time, fourth and one, fourth and two. This was fourth and eight. What does that tell you? That tells me that even if we stop him here, our defense is playing so well that the Giants aren't going to do anything. So we have a better opportunity of making a first down and going down and scoring than giving the ball back to the Giants and letting them score or even make a first down. That's telling to me.
I could agree with you more, but to me it was also cockeyed logic.
Somebody's
getting the ball not once but twice.
Yeah, but the logic is telling what he's saying to you is that, yeah, in a normal day it's not very logical,
right.
But because of the way the game was going and because how putrid this offense was for the Giants, we're going to do it. The odds are with us in this situation.
201-939-4513. Let's go not too far away. Let's go to Manhattan, check in with Conrad. Conrad, you're on with Russ and Jeff. How are we doing today?
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, I should say. Loving the show so far.
Thank you.
One of the things that I, this last loss that I, two things that I that I'm worried of, not worried, but they kind of concern me just a little bit. I would have liked to see McAdoo actually try freezing the kicker at that point. I understand that it's just 1 second left. We have the timeout, at least one. I would just go ahead and try to freeze him and kind of see, get in his head, maybe freeze him while he's about to kick it and he still go through with it, makes it, and the next one he, you know, something to kind of, you know, get the kicker away from his frame of mind. Jeff, you probably could elaborate more on that.
I think you can go either way on this one. Number one, is he going to make this field goal? How many people were sitting there going, he's going to make this, man. 61 yards, I can tell you right now. Yeah. And I don't even know. I don't have the stats in front of me. I'm guessing that in the history of the National Football League that there has been less than 10 kicks made over 60 yards in the history of the league. I'm telling you.
What's the longest?
65. 65 is the longest.
The one I remember is the first one was Tom Dempsey.
Oh, the square footed guy. Yeah. Well, he had the record until
64.
Jason Elam beat it. And so the other side of the coin is he's a rookie. He's probably nervous as hell. He's out there for a game winner, 61 yarder. He's putting pressure on himself already. Everybody else thinks he's not going to make it. I mean, there shouldn't have been no pressure on the guy. Maybe icing him gives a little bit more pressure. But I think you go either way here. I think both teams, honestly, were sitting there flipping through their cards going, okay, let's get ready. We're gonna go to OT here. And the dude makes it.
I could see that happening due to the fact that he is a rookie and all of that. But I would have liked to see that. My concern for next week is even though we haven't gotten the full medical report on OV, whether he'll be out that game or not, is stopping the running game because Philly started really running the ball on his side when he was
when he got injured.
Once he wasn't able to play. So who I would like to see play that side of the field is Kerry Wynn.
Oh, he will.
I think he plays the run better than Okorah.
Well,
even
he does.
I love Okorah, but I just think that Wynn does a great job with the run. And so I didn't see him. I saw him a little bit on Sunday. I didn't see him as much as I would have liked to seen him. So I keep my fingers crossed, and I definitely think we're going to come away with a win. I think that is due. I think that the team understand where we stand. And you know, I'm looking forward to the game on Sunday. Thank you, and I'll enjoy the show.
Thank you,
welcome.
Conrad. You know, Conrad brought up talking about maybe you should have, you know, tried to freeze the
kicker.
I understand that. But when a guy can boot at 61, and I don't know if that kick that was a bomb that left his foot.
As you know, with my son being at Miami, I've been through the kicking camps and stuff. And Cole's kicking camp is the one that we've gone through with my son Zach. Posted a video on Twitter yesterday of Elliot kicking a 65-yard field goal to win the kicking competition in the elite section of the thing.
Is that right?
Yeah, 65.
65.
So it's legit. Back to his question on about the run game. What is happening with this defense is that these teams are now figuring out that Snacks Harrison is a beast, okay? So rather than start with these man-on-man, blocking schemes, they're going to the outside zone blocking, getting the ball outside and trapping those defensive ends. Look at what Detroit did. Look at what the Eagles did. Nobody's going to test the middle of the field with Snacks Harrison and Bromley and give me the kid from Alabama.
Thomason,
excuse me. Those guys, they're not going to go there, okay? So you're going to start seeing a lot of these outside runs. And the Buccaneers have some good running backs, and they will continue to do that until the Giants can stop it, and it's going to hurt them. One thing about Olivia Vernon, remember, that was a Monday night football game. The Giants have to travel on Saturday down to Tampa in a short week. This doesn't look good for OV. I'm just telling you from a player's perspective as far as getting – and just, Russ, we've covered the Giants. You've covered the Giants forever. It seems to me – and this isn't just one team. It just seems to happen that every single year there's a – injury of the year. Sometimes it's hamstrings. Sometimes it's knees. The injury of the year this year is the ankle. Think about it. You've got OV now.
Well, I read the list earlier, folks. Casillas,
okay.
Ankle, Hart ankle, Jenkins ankle, OV ankle.
Eli Apple, ankles.
Ankle.
Okay. Odell Beckham, not on that list. Ankles.
Ankle.
Okay, so it's very strange that there are certain times these injuries rear their ugly head. It's strange to me. High ankles, 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 ankles. It's a year of the ankle. It's crazy.
Sometimes it's a hamstring.
Absolutely. And I know that it's just coincidental, but it's kind of, when you think about it, it's crazy.
You mentioned Elliot, what high school is, a 65-yarder?
No, this was in a competition – in going from – he was already out of college.
Oh,
and he
okay.
was a free agent. They have these competitions that they do at these Coles camps.
Right.
This was before he even made the team.
65.
Well, he got beat out by Bullock, the guy that came in
right.
against the last year.
It reminded me of a story when we were just talking about I mentioned Tom Dempsey. For those of you who don't know
There's
Tom –
There's probably a lot of them, Russ.
No, exactly. But if you don't know Tom Dempsey, big – gut hanging over his thing, and he had half a foot. Pretty sure it was half of a right foot, and he was, straight kicker. No, there was no
back in the day. That's what they did. Yeah.
Kicker, and if I recall correctly, I think he had something wrong with one of his arms. Maybe partial arm. I don't recall. But wait a minute. Here's a guy who was a kicker, a longtime kicker in the NFL. He was kicking for the Saints at this time. The reason I remember it, the great Alex Karras, who's a Hall of Famer for the Detroit Lions, that also had a movie career, he was on Johnny Carson right after this happened. And Alex Karras was a character telling a story. So Johnny Carson asked him about this Tom Dempsey. And Karras goes, "Here we are. They call a timeout. And then parading this guy out with half a foot and half an arm, this heavy-looking guy, as if he's going to come out and do something. And I'm standing over, and he's a lineman, I'm standing over, And all of a sudden, he kicks the ball, and it sounded like an atomic bomb. And all we did was look up. Can you imagine? 64 yards.
Yeah.
64 yards. And we're going back quite a ways.
And back then, everybody was a square-toed kicker, and everybody kicked it straight on. And all the kickers had these special shoes that had a square toe on it. It was flat. Dempsey, he had to have a shoe like that because he only had half of a foot. So his foot might have been a size 10. It was really a size 5, but the front of it was flat, and they used to kick that straight on. And
like out of a cannon. Yeah.
Out of a cannon.
Remember Lou the Toe Rosa for the Cleveland Indians.
I'll tell you what. I was in Seattle, and we played Denver. I don't know why we were playing Denver in a preseason game, but we were. And we were in Denver, the old stadium, and there was a kicker, the backup kicker. Jason Elam was the regular kicker. I think it might have been the third or fourth game of the season, the preseason. Elam had sat out of the game, so they gave this young kid the whole game, right? We're getting ready to go into halftime. Denver drives down, and now they're going to go on and attempt a 66-yard field goal. They send this kid out. He makes it. He made a 66-yard field goal, but it was preseason, so it didn't count as an NFL record. But I have seen a 66-yard field goal made in the National Football
High.
League. It doesn't matter if it's Old Mile High, or because the Old Mile High is right next to the New Mile High, or whatever you call it over there. It's still a mile-high altitude.
66.
And the ball travels up there like you cannot believe.
66 any place is 66.
No question.
It's a long way.
Yeah, so. Sorry to get on to kicking stuff here today, but that's what happens when you host shows with a kicker.
There's nothing wrong with that. So. Listen, anybody who can kick a 61-yarder or a 64, or a 65, or 66.
I couldn't even kick a what amounted to a 31-yard field goal. My only attempt in the National Football League when Matty Bryant was here, okay, and what a great career he's gone on to have.
Right.
You know, the Giants cut him, and next thing you know, he spends 15 years in Atlanta. But he hurt his hamstring at halftime. And this was the 03, the first year I got here. And I always wanted to kick a field goal in the National Football League. At this point, by the time I came to the Giants, I'd already been in the NFL for might have been 15, 16 years. That was my goal. I wanted to kick one field goal. So Coach Fossil asked me if I could kick a field goal. I can't kick a field goal, but of course I told him yes because I want to kick a field goal, right? And lo and behold, third quarter, we're against the Dolphins. We're driving down, and all I'm thinking, please, just get close, man. I want to kick this thing. And sure enough, ball is on. It was a 31-yard field goal, so the ball is basically, 31 minus 8 is, you can do some math here.
23.
The ball's on the 23-yard line, okay? No, the ball's on the 13-yard line because it's 8 behind 10.
Right.
13-yard line. I'm like, here we go, baby. I run out there, right hash, and I'm supposed to, you know, the ball's on the right hash. You got to take a little bit of an angle.
Go ahead.
Right? I took a straight angle. Wide right. Are you kidding me? It was an extra point, the old extra point.
What Fossil say?
Well, I mean,
Go back to punting.
Never again.
What was your longest punt in your career?
I know exactly how, where, and when. All right. It was against the great team of the Dallas Cowboys in the old Dallas Stadium. And that old stadium used to have – the sun used to come through the roof, and there was an area on the field that – the returner, if you could kick it over there, the guy couldn't see it. And I kicked it to that area, and he went up to look for it, and he turned his head, all right, and the ball went right off his shoulder pads and ran all the way down to the 4-yard line, and what I called the trifecta in punting. So you're getting so much knowledge out of punting game today. The trifecta in punting is this: gross punt, net punt, and an inside the 10. That's a trifecta. That was a 77-yard trifecta that day. It was right off his shoulder pad. It was probably about a 45-yard punt, but it went right off his shoulder pad, rolled all the way down to the 4-yard line, and that was the longest one I had.
I think the record, and we're going to get to Haz and Jersey in just 98. One second, was Steve O'Neill?
Steve O'Neill and Randall Cunningham.
Yeah, Randall is
against the Giants on a third down quick kick.
Really? Now, the Steve O'Neill one, I remember he was playing for the Jets, and he boomed it, but –
It
just dropped and rolled and rolled, and rolled a 98-yard punt. Enough. 201-939-4513. Haz in New Jersey. Haz, how are you, my friend?
Good afternoon, fellas. Good afternoon, Russ. Jeff, nice to talk to you. My first time calling.
Hey, well, welcome aboard, Haz. I was wondering. I didn't recognize the name Haz. So that's Haz, welcome aboard.
Yeah, you're a first-time caller, long-time Giants fan.
All right.
I just want to make 3 points. One, you've seen kind of Brandon Marshall. He needs to be able to locate the ball and be able to catch it at its high point. Well, that's something that he's not comfortable with just yet, and that's something that he just needs to be able to do, either defend or catch. So that's one. Number two, I think that we should run more style pro offense or offset eye type, two tight end, one receiver, and be able to work Ingram and be able to work Ellison and Shane Smith at the same time and be able to create mismatches with our defense.
Right.
I mean, with other defenses. And number three, we need to tackle. We just have to go back to the fundamentals and tackle. We are in position and we're not tackling. We have to gang tackle like our lives depend on it, and Eli Apple has to look for the ball. He's in position. He just has to raise his head and look for the ball. That's all you have to do, and we'll be good. So I think we'll be able to take care of Tampa. I think that our defense will tackle, our offense will make plays, and I think that we'll be one game at a time. One game, one inch, 1 foot, one game at a time. So I appreciate it, fellas. I thank you for listening to me.
All right, Haswell, and we're going to go over each one. On the Brandon Marshall, I think everybody would agree with that, and Brandon probably would as well. I mean,
well, there was a play in the Detroit game.
Oh, that was the killer right
where
there.
Where he went up and, you know, yeah.
He beat himself up over that.
Well, he should. And I think that every receiver has to be a defender. You're taught that in practice, and that's just the way you have to do it. The ball's thrown to you, and if it's underthrown, you become a defender, and you got to be able to know how to knock the ball down. There's something going on with Brandon Marshall is following the football in the air, and he's, you know, I don't know what's happening with that. The second part about the traditional old school football formations, that ain't happening. You got to have an offensive line that's a mauling group. This offensive line for the Giants is not a mauling group to run it down somebody's throats. I mean, you look at the 07 team where you had that offensive line and you had Brandon Jacobs at 265 pounds that could just pound the rock. Then you can go with a fullback like that, but and maybe two tight ends or one tight end.
And you also had Ahmad Bradshaw who –
Yeah, the changeup.
He was a little – what I used to call him, the little big man, because even though he was a small guy, he played big.
Played tough,
he
too.
He played really, really tough. So that – and the third –
That dude played on two broken feet
the
whole season.
Yeah. Very, very tough. And I, you know what? I just saw him for the celebration.
Yeah, looked good.
And he looked terrific.
Looked great.
He
yeah.
looked like he could go out and play.
I could talk to him all day. The guy was just a competitor.
The third point he made about tackling, and he brought up Eli Apple. I couldn't agree with you more. Eli Apple is he's an extremely talented guy. And the thing that frustrated me about watching Eli, he runs toe-to-toe. It's great coverage all the way down, and he just –
Well,
then he mislocates or can't locate the ball, and it's created a couple of big problems.
Some of the things that are going on with Eli Apple is it's his techniques and his fundamentals are he's got to work on them and some of the mental mistakes he's making. He's always been a pretty good tackler, and really the whole National Football League in terms of tackling is going to get better. We all know about preseason and how these guys practice. So really the first quarter of the season is when things start to – after that, they start to change. You will see better tackling. I agree with the last caller.
Lenny in Columbia, Maryland. Len, you're on with Russ and Jeff. How are we doing today?
What's up, Len?
Hey, guys. How you doing today? Hey, listen. Hey, Russ.
Yes, sir.
Lou Groza was a heck of an offensive tackle.
Oh, no.
He wasn't just a kicker.
No. Without question. But he was this big guy, if you remember, Len. You know,
yeah.
When he came onto the field to go kick a field goal, if you remember, the ground shook. He was that kind of guy.
Yeah, but he was a darn good offensive lineman, Russ.
What wasn't all – correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm trying to remember, Len. A guy who used to kick for the Colts, Lou Michaels.
Lou Michaels kicked in that famous Jets Super Bowl back in 69.
If I'm correct – I believe he was a lineman as well. Not sure, but I believe so. Anyway,
yes, he was. He was a defensive lineman,
right.
Defensive end.
Right. If there's one guy that's going to answer those questions, it's the guy that's on the line right now. Len knows a lot about football and back in the days when I wasn't even around. So,
man, it was great. Listen, Yeah, you know, I know the Brett Ellison situation is a little frustrating. You know, get Ellison back on the field, but you know, the bottom line is, guys, you can only play 11 at a time. Who's coming off the field?
No, you're not.
I mean, who are you gonna put Red in there? But who the heck are you taking? You taking Beckham off? You taking Shepard?
You have to take
Marshall,
a receiver off.
Ingram? No, Ingram? We seem committed to Ingram.
Well, good. We should be.
Well, no, they are committed to Ingram, but I think Len and I happen to agree with you, but they didn't go out. Remember this, Len. They didn't go out and spend a lot of money to bring Red Ellison in. So he would sit on a bench for whatever reason is dictated, and I'm not the coach. I'm not there in the huddle. I'm not there on the sideline. I agree with you, but believe me, they paid this guy to this guy. He just hasn't been used
enough.
But
they also paid. 1 second, Lambert. They also paid this guy to block.
Right.
Right. So what? How many times did the Giants run the football last week? They didn't run it very often. 17 times, I believe. So what are they going to need?
They're not going to need
Red Ellison.
You're right. But it just, you know, it's one guy. I don't want to say it's one guy too many, but I don't know how we get Ellison on more than what he's getting on for, because you're taking off one of those superstars. Or perceived superstars.
It's matchups against defense.
Hey, Jeff, let me ask you a question about wing.
All right.
God, it's frustrating. You know, I think he's one of the 32 best punters in the world, Jeff.
He's good.
But, geez, he's inconsistent.
Well,
and it's not just that one kick, Jeff.
I know where you're going. I'm gonna give you my quick 2 seconds, my 2 cents about that kick. Okay.
Okay.
Obviously, it's about the guy. Okay. As you know, if that was me in that situation, I would have had all the ability and confidence to kick the ball out of bounds 40 to 45 yards, and I could have executed it in my sleep, okay?
Yeah.
Brad Wing is not a guy. Do you see Brad Wing kicking the ball out of bounds all the time? No, you don't, okay?
No.
But one thing that you do see Brad Wing do very well, because he's been doing it since he was born, and that's over in Australia, and that's doing that Australian rules kick, that end-over-end kick that he's
just,
I mean, that's his bread and butter. Go with that kick, 40 yards, hang it in the air. The Eagles are going to fair catch whatever they give to them. They're not going to return a kick, okay?
Yeah.
They're trying to save. They only had how many, 13 seconds left or whatever it was. They're not going to return the ball. Go run what you brung, I call it. Your best kick there is the Aussie kick to the numbers, 40 yards, and be done with it. I think Brad
just shanked it.
Hey, Jeff, the best thing about you – and I'm going to give you your props here. The best thing about you was your consistency. Now, I don't want to simplify it too much, but all the punter does is punt. He swings the leg.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you ought to be able to do it over and over and over again. And Fiegels, you were able to, with all due respect to all the other kickers, you were able to do that.
I appreciate
that. It's sometimes overlooked, I think.
Well, his most consistent kick is the kick that you don't want in that situation. His most consistent kick is a bomber. It's a 55, 60-yard punt. Maybe you do want that, but then you're going to put your gun to your head and go back to the Deshaun Jackson days with the kickoff
for
a return
God,
for a
you're
touchdown.
Killing me, Jeff. Don't bring that up.
But I'm just telling you.
Hey, listen. Here's the game plan. Let's get to 4-4. You can't do anything till you get to 500. Let's get to 4-4. We go on a run. We win 6 out of the last 8. We're 10-6. We keep our fingers crossed. It's a happy new year. Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Lenny, thank you. But you know what? Before you get to 4-4, let's get to 1-3.
Yeah,
we were talking earlier.
And I'm looking at the 4-4. You know, here's a great thing about Big Blue Kickoff Live. We can talk about 4-4. We can talk about the Chargers, the Denver, and Seattle, and the Rams that they all have to play and to go at 4-4 in those next 3.5-4 weeks. So, I mean, if you're a player, you're not talking about that, but we can talk about it. But, I mean, yeah, Tampa Bay, is it a winnable game? It's going to be a tough winnable game. Chargers coming in, you know, on the road from the West Coast, definitely a winnable game. At Denver, that's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, Seattle,
and then Seattle is not playing that well, but they're coming over here.
Seattle. And then it's a bye week, and then it's the Rams.
Maybe, you know, could it be 3-5, you know, with the chance, but – bottom line, guys, here is that the Giants have dug themselves a tremendous, tremendous hole. And We'll just continue to say it. You got it one game at a time, and this is a big one. On a short week, I will tell you, a short week makes a big difference.
Well, listen to me. You just, since we're having fun with the schedule, you just brought
it
up.
Wait, this isn't a short. Yeah, this is a short week.
No, it's at Tampa, the Chargers, at Denver, Seattle. Then they have a bye. Now, after the bye, folks, they have the Rams at home. They go to Frisco. After Frisco, here's their schedule. Home against Kansas City, at the Redskins, home against Oakland, home against Dallas, home against Philly, at Arizona, home against Washington. What's easy?
By the way, I'm looking at the schedule to the right. That's okay. Why. I'm not trying to look behind your head. Just so you know.
I just wanted to make sure.
It's right there if you need it.
So, but Len brought up something that I'm glad he gave you props, because this is something, and I always used to discuss it with you going back to when you were playing. A lot of people, and you've heard football players say this. They'll look at the kicker, the place kicker, they'll look at the punter. Well, they're not athletes. They're not playing.
Well,
like
they always
all the
think
time.
That the foot. They always knew that the punter was a better athlete than the kicker.
You're right. Let me tell you something, folks. I can say this from firsthand knowledge, and it's not because this guy is sitting next to me.
All right.
I mean, you really, but quite frankly, you still do it. You took care of yourself, and you worked at it all the time.
Well, that's how I played 22
years.
But
that's how you last 22 years. I shouldn't say, I don't want to say lasted 22 years, excelled in a league for 22 years.
I will tell you, if my knee did not go out on me, I mean,
think you still
that was
do
6 years ago, so
right.
28 years might be stretching it, but listen, I know I could have played at least another 3 years. And I'll tell you why.
That's got to be one of the longest pensions in the NFL.
it's up there. but because I was consistent, like Len said, I tell me what you want me to do, I'll do it for you. I didn't really care if my average was 35 or 49. I didn't care. All I cared about was trying to win, trying to do what the team pays me to do, and that's be consistent and do and win games.
Right.
And, yes, you can win games as a punter. It's field position battle. There's times when you come on the field and you're a defensive player. So, you know, those teams and those good defenses, I was part of the defense. The punter is part of the defense, and the kicker is part of the offense.
You taught us, it's not just booming it away. It's where you're booming it to.
And I have to come back. I misspoke here. I kept saying a short week. The Giants came off of a short week this last week. They do not have a short week this week. They played on Sunday. They play on Sunday this week coming up. So there is an extra day, which is good for Olivia Vernon, which I was saying.
Let's hope so. Don in Tennessee. Don, you're on with Russ and Jeff Fegels. How you doing?
Don in Tennessee.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Good, Don.
I'm in the greater Knoxville area, but I'm a longtime Giant fan from New York.
Very
good.
I got a question for you. I know the Giants were looking at LeGarrette Blount during the offseason. They didn't choose to go after him. But what disturbed me the most is the way the amount of yardage the running game seemed to get against the Giants' defense, which has always been the stalwart part of the Giants. Can you guys explain to me what was going on? I know Vernon had a bad ankle in that game, but it just seemed they ran over the Giants' defensive line.
Well, I had mentioned it earlier in the show, is that these...
I'm sorry.
Real briefly, what's happening is that we know about Snacks Harrison in the middle, okay? And then the other two guys that they trickle in there. They're very good up the middle, so these teams are there. What they're doing now is they're going to a zone blocking outside running scheme. You look, Detroit did it. You look, the Eagles did it. Okay, and something that the Eagles did, that they took a page out of the Giants back in 2007 with that triple headed monster. You had this Carroll kid come in. You had LeGarrette Blount come in, and then one other running back,
Smallwood.
Yes, that's it. Those three guys. Okay. There was their rotation, kept them healthy, and we're running some stretch plays and getting outside. And then once Olivia Vernon got hurt, they just kept going to that side. So they didn't want to test the middle of the lineup. And another thing about the defensive running game, I know he's a young guy. He made 18 tackles the first game. B.J. Goodson is a big part of that running defense. And with him out of the lineup with Calvin Munson in the middle as a rookie free agent.
Who did pretty good.
He did, but I'm just going to tell you right now. If you are a rookie free agent off the street starting for the New York Giants, you're doing it for a reason. Number one, you're a decent player, but you're not a B.J. Goodson who went to Clemson. Okay, that there's a big void in the middle there. Okay, that when they if they can get B.J. back, that's going to help them. I don't know. He's still with the shin, so we don't have the
we don't know exactly.
Yeah, if he's on the bike or practicing.
Yeah,
or,
this was just the early report today. We don't know. We'll find that.
Got to get him back.
But you know what, Don?
Last question.
I'll take it off the air.
Are we going to see a little bit more of Wynn in the defensive line? Because every time I've seen him come in, he's played extremely well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a guy that's – one of the reasons why Kerry Wynn is on this team is because of his versatility. He can play interior. He can play outside. He can switch from each side back and forth. You know, Romeo Okwara is another guy that you saw come in when Vernon got hurt. He's a guy that's getting better. He has a lot of ability, okay? But he's just – you know, but he's not a every down player. And that's a tough transition for a guy that comes in a substitute situation to go in there and be a full-time starter because they got their starters out. I will tell you that you will see Kerry Wynn in certain situations. That he's good against the run.
Thank you for the call, Don.
Yeah, thank you, Don.
Much appreciated. I think more disturbing than just giving up the yards, you know, against the Eagles was the poor tackling. I mean, you know, listen, Blunt is a big guy, but it was even Smallwood. They'd be, after the initial tackle, they'd get,
yeah.
Even if it's 3 yards, but yeah. They get that yardage.
Yards after contact.
Yeah.
And the whole league is just horrible tacklers. And the whole league has gone to hell in a handbasket.
Why is that? Is that because
it's
the practice?
It's training. Yeah. It's practice. And like I said earlier, it takes the league 4 weeks to catch up to where they need to be from tackling because they're getting, you know, they're getting 60-minute games of tackling in. You know, you compound that what a regular practice is. You know, the games are actually – you're getting more tackling in games than you were ever getting in practice. So it just catches up to itself. Usually between the fifth and the eighth game the season, the tackling starts to get much better.
So you think – is that a direct correlation to the fact that from OTAs and
yeah,
camp?
Yeah, it's the CBA. It's what the players wanted. It's what the teams didn't want, and what the coaches didn't want. It's limited practice days. It's you're only allowed to do this, this, and that, and they just don't hit.
It certainly reared its ugly head last week.
There's a lot. You've been out to practice before. There's a big difference between tackling a rolling donut than a full fledged guy that weighs 240 pounds running downhill.
All right, let's nearby our friend Nick at the Meadowlands, real close by. Nick, how are we doing today?
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Nick? A lot of
good points, Jeff, on punting, you know?
Well, hey, you know what? Once in a while, Nick, as you know, and you're a regular caller for us, I like to throw in a couple punting nuggets for you guys so you just, you know, how great it is.
And, you know, there was a guy in Brad Wing's face when he made that kick, you know?
Okay.
Guy almost made a good play. But I was going to say with Brandon Marshall, Russ was bringing it up yesterday, a great point. You have to either be aggressive and go for that ball, or on first and 10, you got to knock the ball down. You got to do something when it comes to that.
Yeah.
But the other thing you guys were just bringing up, it's great because you grew up in the Southwest, Jeff, just like I did. And you remember you probably had 115-plus in the first week of August. I had 110-plus in Vegas. Yeah. And you know what? Two-a-days. We went to football camp, you know, at Utah State University for, you know, a week and a half. You know, all this stuff, you're absolutely right. Tackling donuts, that's why we're seeing this. And these guys, a lot of them, they get take advantage until week four, you know what I mean, until they're finally tuned and ready to tackle, you know.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Probably, Nick, from a coaching standpoint, I wonder if, you know, whether they like it or not, they say to themselves, amongst themselves as the coaches – let's get through these first 4 or 5 games. hoping we get the W's that we need, and then we're in good shape. But you know, with this start, it just exacerbates everything.
Well, Nick, and you'll probably agree with me here. You know, part of tackling is position. So if you're out of position, you can't make tackles. So
you're tackling a donut. You need a guy out there that's shifting his hips,
You know what you can do up in Dartmouth, they developed a dummy that's actually a robot, and these guys tackle this thing. Do you know that?
Yeah. So actually, Jeff, really? What would you say? You know, a long time ago, we went through some brutal times, huh? Playing through high school, college.
Huh. Yeah.
Bringing it back would be a great idea, wouldn't it?
It would. It's not going to happen.
What are you talking about? Two-a-days?
No, we're talking about
hitting. Yes, two-a-days.
That never happened.
No, they have two-a-days now, but they don't have real two-a-days. I mean, a lot of the veteran guys, and I can't talk like I know what I'm – I mean, listen, I didn't do any hitting drills. I never went through any of that stuff. But the guys that I do know that remember two-a-days and even three-a-days back in the Perkins area, all these guys – is that what his name, Perkins? Remember?
Don Perkins.
Don Perkins.
Those
guys used to do three-a-days.
Don Perkins played
– That's crazy.
Don Perkins.
Yeah. You talk about two-a-days. They used to do three-a-days.
Here's a question for you. Because you go back into the day, not trying to make you feel old. But who was the first pick of the 81 draft before LT? And thank God we didn't grab him and we grabbed LT.
I'm not going to cheat. Oh, hold on a second. I'm not going to cheat because I have the book here. Go ahead and tell me.
Arch Schliester.
George Rogers, running back for the Saints. And you know what both of those guys did in history that's never been done? Those were the Rookie Offensive Player of the Year and a Defensive Player of the Year, 1 and 2.
There you go, Nick. As always, buddy, thank you for the call. Have
take
a good
care,
day.
Fellas.
All right, Nick. Thank you, buddy. So really, Russ. Because you how much
Russ,
I do
Russ.
With Lance.
It's okay, YA.
There you go. You call me YA, I call you Lance. You guys are probably the same size, I mean, as far as height-wise. So that's probably what it was. Anyways, tough game. Tough game coming up for these guys. They got to get it back. A lot of stuff in the media that people are talking about, the Odell stuff, all this kind of stuff that's going on. I will tell you this, because I've been there. These are tough times for players. It's tough to – and one thing will cure all of this, and you know what I'm about to say. It's a win.
Listen.
It cures. It's the all-time medicine.
What's the coach's cliche? Winning builds confidence and losing goes in the opposite direction, whether they like to admit it or not, especially when the team's losing. Listen, I asked Ben prior to, I interview him every week. Last week I asked him, is this a crisis situation? And he said, wouldn't say it's crisis, but the urgency
is heightened.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you what, the urgency is certainly heightened from last week to this week. You want to call it a crisis? I think from a situation when you're winless, especially when you're I think going through a losing streak in the middle of the season is different than when you start. Because
of course,
when you start,
you've already got some wins.
You want that. You need that first win. You want to get off on – when you lose that first game of the season, that's lousy because you get the first one. All right, let's go. We're ready to rock and roll. But right now – and whether they admit it or not, there's got to be some second guessing and some.
Well, what's tough with this team is that everybody had them on paper coming into the regular season,
sure.
And so did we. Everybody did as being a really good team, and they were gonna, they were gonna win the NFC, and they were gonna go on. And what happens is the fact that guys start believing it, and now that they're 0-3, they're back to this is true reality now. This isn't on paper. This is real. 0-3, and is it a crisis? Probably not, but I can tell you, like you said, it's definitely something that has to be addressed and go down to Tampa to win a game and get back on the winning side of things. And I'll tell you, there's no better feeling when you're on a 2 or 3 game, either in the beginning or the end,
right,
or in the middle. It's worse at the beginning. When you get that win, I'll tell you what, it just feels like the world has been lifted off your shoulders, and now you're going to go get another one next week against the Chargers. We could talk about that.
That's right, but the bottom line is they need a win right now. Big Blue needs a win right now by any means necessary.
No question.
But right now it is time to say goodbye for Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. For 22-year veteran Jeff Eagles and myself, Russ Salzberg, thanks for being part of it. We'll see you next time.